Hacks is back for season 3, and so is the official Hacks podcast. In each episode, Hacks creators Lucia Aniello, Paul W. Downs, and Jen Statsky speak with cast and crew members to unpack the Emmy-winning comedy series.
You'll hear Hannah Einbinder and Gene Smart speak to their on-screen dynamic, along with stories from the show's writer's room, on-set antics, and creating the world that Deborah and Ava inhabit. Watch Hacks, streaming exclusively on Max, and listen to the official Hacks podcast on Max or wherever you get your podcasts.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
I am so excited about this podcast, The Bright Side. You guys are giving people a chance to shine a light on their lives, shine a light on a little advice that they want to share.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
Imagine you ask two people the same 7 questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same 7 questions, including Courtney Cox, Rob Delaney, Liz Phair, and many, many more. Join me on season 3 of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. 7 questions, limitless answers.
All I ever wanted was a little love. I want true romance, it's true.
Hello and welcome to True Romance. This is Carolina Barlow.
And this is Devin Leary.
Devin, I want to cut the bullshit and just ask you how your week is going.
Okay, so first of all, maybe check with me next time before you cut the bullshit, because I wasn't ready to cut the bullshit.
Oh,
and now I'm forced to cut the bullshit before I wanted to, but that's okay.
Thank you for your feedback, and I will try to do so next week.
Yeah, just take it into consideration, like the idea of thinking of others before yourself. But it's not like everyone has to do that. It's like there's enough good people in the world that can make up for the behavior of people like you. So it's fine. If you want it. No, I'm kidding. No, I'm just joshing. I don't feel that way at all. No, I'm actually a bad person because this week I participated in something I never, ever could have foreseen for myself. I left not even knowing who I am, because I just never thought this would happen to me. What happened was I'm doing my own little thing, which is watching true crime content 24/7, because it comforts me to hear about how people kill other people and con people and whatever.
Especially during the holidays.
I'm really running low. Like, I stooped to watching the Lacey Peterson trial again. So I was looking for something new. I go to Prime. Because, again, I'm a bad person. I haven't yet given up Amazon Prime. I know I should. I know the Jeffs don't need any more money, but yet here I am. So I go to Prime, and I'm looking at recommendations for you. I had already done my Hulu recommendations. Nothing there. Netflix, same thing. So I'm on Prime, and I see this documentary recommended to me. It's called Some Sort of Address is the name of the movie, and then : American Tragedy. So I'm thinking, up my alley. And then I see the description. It's like something about the story of a never before seen type of case with this maniacal doctor who like tore apart a community. So of course I'm intrigued. Of course I'm clicking play. Of course. That's just what one does. And so I'm watching it, and you know, it's a slow start, and slowly I'm like, okay, so he was an abortionist. That is the type of doctor he was. But I'm like, okay. I mean, assuming someone smart enough to make a documentary is going to be on my side of this thing. And then they're saying that this guy did, you know, really bad abortion. This is coming out wrong. Then they're saying that this guy committed crimes by botching abortions, basically, is the nice way to put it. The details they included were very gruesome, and I'm not going to go there because I don't think that everyone has the same taste for gruesomeness that I do.
Do you think they were fact-based, or do you think it was the evangelical Christian alt-right saying...
Okay, don't get ahead of me. So This is what I'm saying is that this is when it really turned for me when a cop they were interviewing said, I mean, you hear about stuff like this, but then you see it with your own eyes. And that's what I saw in that abortion clinic. And I'll never be the same. And I was like, no, 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 no. Don't take me here. Don't take me here. And it turned into a full-blown pro-life, anti-abortion, like informational movie about the horrors of abortion. They were like interviewing these women who were like, I wish I never had one. Then they interview these, and granted, yes, I should have stopped watching by now, but at this point, I sunk in cost theory. I've given some time to this, and I already have committed the crime of now that I've, you know, benefited this person who made this documentary. So I'm like, whatever, I'm in. I'm going to see what happens. And then they're full blown interviewing people who used to work at Planned Parenthood, talking about how Planned Parenthood is actually an evil place. And they think, and all of them were saying, like, I'm not saying it's all bad, but when I worked at Planned Parenthood, there was, you know, I don't even want to say the things they said. It was crazy. They were like, when I worked at Planned Parenthood, they did murder babies. But I'm not saying everyone murders babies, but that's what I saw. And all I'm saying is just think about it. And I was like, how am I here? Who am I? What am I? What is this? And then I decided they got a point. No, I'm kidding.
Oh, God. I think that there is so much active propaganda because these people really do believe that. So they are ruthless in terms of spreading false information because they think they're saving lives instead of cells.
I mean, I was like, at least it's just kind of fascinating to see what the other side actually thinks. And I think this guy was, I mean, I don't even know how I feel about the guy. They didn't really provide any real information, so it's hard to say. But he's in jail. And it just was, you know what? It was a lesson because you have to be careful with your true crime picks. And you can't just throw on just any American tragedy that you come across in your suggestions.
Especially if it's not an American tragedy and it's just women receiving health care. I really think it's fascinating how many people have an opinion about this without doing any research. Like you just, I think that's the problem. You really have to protect your brain and say, why do I think this? I've learned a lot that way. I'm speaking for myself too. There was things I thought, I'll use healthcare as an example. I thought universal healthcare was a crazy radical position that we could not pay for until I learned more information about it. And I was like, I'm actually completely wrong. And by opposing this, I'm saying that some people, because they don't have enough money, will not receive healthcare, and that's fine, which it absolutely isn't. So what I'm saying is that don't watch movies based on lies.
Okay, so that was
I'm not directing that at you. I'm directing that at humans.
No, I mean, listen, we all watch movies based on lies. We watch movies about, you know, like a ghost, a dog that talks.
Air Bud. If you're speaking about Air Bud, that's actually a documentary.
No, I was speaking about the movie Up, which all I remember from it, even though I remember like it was really sad, but mostly I remember the dog named Doug.
One of my favorite memories is me and my grandfather watching Air Bud. Sorry to hijack the conversation and direct it back towards Air Bud. But me and my grandfather were watching Air Bud. And at one point, Air Bud's original owner finds out that he can play football and wants him back to make money off of him. And the little kid who had found Air Bud, I don't know, like tied to a dumpster or something like that in a box and rescued him and taught him football, they go to court to like against each other to try to get custody of the dog. And my grandfather is watching it with me and he's like, God damn it. Just say that you looked for its owner. You couldn't find it. And that's because the owner didn't care about him. Okay. He was
that
like, really
was the
frustrated.
Part he had a problem with.
Yeah.
That,
and he was like,
that was where he was
on,
like,
this
is not
clear.
Realistic.
And he was like trying to give the kid pointers. He's like, come on, be clear. That's how you get the dog back.
If I had a dog that literally flew in the air to dunk basketballs, it's crazy to think that I would enter into a litigation without preparing all my facts, but that's just me. How was your week, Carolina?
I am trying to complain less. I complain a lot. I'm putting that as a disclaimer before I get into complaining. No, okay. I just realized that I can find ways to complain about anything. I'm tired. I have to tell someone about it. I'm hungry. I have to tell someone about it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have enough time to watch 5 episodes of Law and Order Criminal Intent. That's not okay. And
it's not. So I'm here to tell you it's not.
Really need to just stop complaining. And I don't know how I'm going to do that. And at the same time, I'm very excited for Christmas to come up. It's one of my favorite holidays.
Yeah.
I know you have an intense obsession with it.
Yes.
And I'm even happier for you. But I am ready to relax and say I'm going to read, but not read that much.
Well, I think the complaining thing is good because I struggle so much with it. And I feel like I've made it a point to try to work on it, but it's so hard. Like,
I've been doing it for 30 years.
Why do I feel a need to make a bad situation worse by constantly saying how bad it is? Like, I don't get where that comes from in me, but if I have to wait in a line with people...
Waiting in line for a trendy restaurant, waiting in line for a cronut or a coffee shop, it's crazy loco to me.
I did wait in line for a cronut and then they ran out by the time I got there. And I was like, I literally was like, all right, fine, I'll take 3 of those, 2 of those, 4 of those, 5 of those, and brought back like a giant bag for my family. And I was like, I just spent so much money on this. I don't know why. And here you go. And they were like,
donuts are dessert food. Donuts are dessert food. How can you eat a donut in the morning?
Well, you can eat them any time of day.
And bagels are a possible lunch food.
Mm-hmm.
And cereal, you can eat in bed before you go to sleep. Okay, those are my opinions. Just like universal healthcare, they may seem radical, but we really have to look and investigate more. I would love to get to our guest today because I'm very excited.
As would I. Okay, so listeners, you're welcome. Because we have a guest today who is not only a friend, a good friend, I will say. I will dare to say it. She is also a comedian and a podcaster. You may know her from one of her pods, either Whitey Puzzleman's Crossword Hour or Fitless. She's also a good friend of mine and not of Carolina's. Welcome to the pod, Bianca Brady.
Hi, thank you for having me. What an honor.
Thank you so much for coming on the pod.
We are so honored.
My pleasure.
So please tell us a little bit about your podcast before we jump in.
Okay, so Fitless was a show that I did for about a year. And it was about exercise classes and exercise and how hard it is to do it and how mm-hmm. it kind of feels bad and sucks. But mm-hmm. then also you feel like you have to. So I would go to a class with a guest or do a workout with a guest and then we would talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
So as you might imagine, that is a lot of production.
Mm-hmm.
That's
like, a huge commitment.
That's a big commitment. Not only do you have to schedule 2 outings a week, but you also have to exercise. And
Wow. So
after about a year of that, I was like, this is a great journey. Thank you. You know, let me close the book on this chapter. Yeah. Let me do something that's a little bit less work. So, of course, being me, my less work thing was to make a podcast about doing the New York Times crossword puzzle every single day and mm-hmm. talking about each puzzle with my absolutely genius co-host Olivia Shepson. Check her out. She's the best. So turns out that's a lot of work too, to do the crossword puzzle every single day.
This is a crazy amount of work.
Yeah. Make notes about every single puzzle. And always finish the puzzle and be obsessive about the puzzle. So
do you give yourself internet searches? Do you allow internet searches?
I will Google very rarely, but I try not to Google the answer. I try to Google the information because, of course, right. there are sites out there where it's like one across today is baloney.
Wow.
And you can just put that in.
Someone does that?
What's the clue for that?
It's round and pink.
lunch meat that's fake, you know, or whatever. Yeah. Anyway, so we're on hiatus from that. Again, it's a hard thing to-
I know. I'm like, meanwhile, Caroline and I are like, I guess I'll talk about my ex-boyfriend again. I guess I'll talk about...
Do I have more again. To say? Yeah, I think so. I want to say I've tried the New York Times crossword maybe 3 or 4 times. And since it takes me forever to get 1 or 2, I just get depressed and give up. That being said, if I find a crossword puzzle in the back of, say, People magazine, I'm like, oh, start your engines, folks.
It's on and popping. Yeah, I've become totally obsessed and I have like a multi-year streak of doing it every day. But there's a lot going on for me right now, which I think we're going to get to. So the pod is on hiatus, but we're hopefully going to come back, you know, back and better than ever. But to all the Whitey Puzzleman fans who are undoubtedly listening to this right now, I just want to shout you guys out and say thank you so much and we'll be back and peace and love, as Ringo Starr once famously said. Peace and
love. Wow.
Yeah.
I haven't heard that quote before, but I am going to put that over some pink background and then quote it anonymous and then DM it to Khloe Kardashian for her stories.
I think it's profoundly moving.
Okay, I just want to say that I hate the New York, I love the New York Times crossword, but I hate the clues that are like, bottle of grapes, question mark? And I'm like, okay, well, what's the bit? Like, how am I supposed to guess when I don't know what the bit is? They'll be like, it's a lightning in a bottle? Like,
we have what? a whole thing about the question mark clues on the show. We talk about it all the time because I'm easily amused by them. And Olivia is like, that's not fucking funny, dude. Like, she's like, what? Shut up. Yeah.
No, I know. Some of them are funny. But yeah. But also, my other pet peeve is when you start to get the theme and you're like, wait, it's golf? I know nothing about, like, I'm just, the odds are against me. Because they'll be like 29 across... famous PGA, and I'm like, Producers Guild? Oh, Golf Association?
We're like, pretty sure it's Tiger Woods.
Yeah, I'm like, Woods.
Arnold Palmer. Devin, can you tell us a little bit about how you and Bianca met?
Oh, sure. I lived a couple years ago at an apartment that I think someone else maybe referred to it as this, as like the sisterhood of the traveling apartment type of thing, where it's just this apartment that a bunch of women have lived at in their formative years in Brooklyn. So I moved in there after a woman who'd been there for many years moved out, and with our friends Tess Sitzman and Nora Pajansky. And when I lived there, there was always like this revolving door of women coming in and out of the apartment. And I just assumed that all of them had lived there at one point. So I don't know if you lived there, Bianca, but I just was like, oh, Bianca probably lived here at some point.
No, I never did. I'm an outlier.
You were a part of the personality of the apartment to me, because I would come home and you would be on the couch with Nora. And it would just be a gift. And I would sit with you guys and chat. And I, in that process, was gifted again with your theory of pointy, round, weird. So I would like you to explain this to our listeners, because this was another like random weekend night or something that I came home. Bianca was on the couch with Nora saying, like, what's her name? Ellen Pompeo is pointy round or something. And I was like, color me intrigued. What? And you then explained to me this theology.
Yeah. So a paradigm that I invented while watching the Oscars at that apartment with Nora. And let me just say, this is how I make most of my friends, is that I just am in their homes. And then they come home and they talk to me. So that's like a part of my deal.
That's part of your process.
Yeah, check me out in your living room if you want to like hang out. So pointy, weird, round plane. I was like, you know what, Nora? I think that all women's faces, and this is not, there's no negative connotation or
no judgment.
You're either pointy or round, and you're either weird or plain. Me, myself, I am a round weird.
Okay.
And Devin, I would say that you are a pointy plain.
Okay.
And Carolina, I can't judge because I have not seen you in person. But I would say, you know what? Maybe a round plain, even.
Yeah. I have a round face.
Yeah. So essentially, you look at a woman and you say, what are her two qualities? Is she pointy or round? Is she weird or plain? And you could watch the Academy Awards and just pick out, you know, who's the most famous round plain. I would say Scarlett Johansson. Who's the most famous pointy weird? I would say Hilary Swank.
Wow.
I think a lot of celebs are round planes or pointy planes. And I think, well, I figured this out because I was like, you know who I think is the most beautiful woman alive? Rooney Mara. And everyone was like, wait, why? And I was like, because she's pointy and she's plain. And as a round weird, I seek to be the opposite of what I am.
Right.
And so I'm attracted to pointy planes. I love pointy planes. I see them and I'm like, wow, imagine being so pointy and so plain.
I have to ask a question. When you say plain and weird, what does that really mean?
You know, it's a vibe. And thank you for the question. That is what journalism is all about. And I do appreciate that.
But it's simply a vibe.
For me, it's like Selma Hayek is a round weird. She's very beautiful. But I love Rooney Mara, who is a pointy plane.
Right.
You know what I mean?
I love this game. I really do not. I do not know how to play it.
Okay. So all you have to know is you look like Scarlett Johansson. That's what we've basically
said.
Well,
yeah, I actually already knew that before we played this game. But I would say that Rooney Mara is weird.
Oh, her personality is weird.
But her face is pointy.
And it doesn't work on men, so don't even try it.
I won't. Oh.
They don't deserve this.
Game. Men can either be bros or shrimps. It's a binary.
Thank you for that philosophy.
Yeah, no, everybody listening, take it into your homes. It's actually like a great game to play during quarantine. You're on a Zoom call with your college friends. You know, you should do a screen share, bring up a Google image search of the celebrity in question. And everyone goes like, no, she's a pointy plane. No, she's a round plane. No. And then there's a rare occasion where somebody could be a rare square. It's only happened once.
With who?
Some reality star whose name I forget. But I was like, she might be a rare square. Anyway, I'm the final arbiter. So I'll give anyone my phone number if they don't know, they want to text me what is, you know, Jennifer Garner. I can't decide. And I'll be like, pointy weird, you know?
Oh my God. I'm trying so hard to think who the reality star is who's square, but I don't know.
She was like a Property Brothers assistant or something.
Every once in a while, I go into the living room and my mom's watching HGTV and she tries to explain the show to me. And I, like, every once in a while, I get into it if, like, there's a couple that's fighting, but overall, it loses me.
Yeah.
We're going to have to take a quick ad break and then we're going to talk more with our beautiful round weird Bianca.
I want true romance.
Hacks is back for season 3 and so is the official Hacks podcast. In each episode, Hacks creators Lucia Aniello, Paul W. Downs, and Jen Stadtsky speak with cast and crew members to unpack the Emmy-winning comedy series. you'll hear Hannah Einbinder and Jean Smart speak to their on-screen dynamic, along with Hacks writer and actor Pat Regan, on how their improv experience helped them when shooting scenes and what it was like writing scripts for specific actors.
You'll also hear from crew members like the costume designers on what it was like creating the world that Deborah and Ava inhabit. Hear stories from the show's writer's room, on-set antics, and more. Watch Hacks streaming exclusively on Max and listen to the official Hacks podcast on Max or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV true crime podcast, To Live and Die in LA. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm preaching to somebody today who is waiting for God to give you your next step. And you don't know what it is yet. You need God to show you your next step. Because God, I can't stay where I am, like I am, where it is. This isn't going to work. I have to move on, but I don't know where. A lot of time you'll use it as an excuse. Well, I don't know how, I don't know where, I don't know what. God, if you show me, God, if you tell me, God, if, no. You know enough right now. And if you needed to know more, he would show you.
Hey, this is Stephen Furtick. I want to invite you to listen to my podcast, Elevation with Stephen Furtick. I am here to help you for the battles that you face in life, for the times when you feel discouraged, for the times that you need guidance from God. I want to give you the truth of what he says about you to help you rise to your full potential. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back with True Romance, joined by the amazing Bianca and also some other people.
Okay, so let's move into a little bit of a different topic, ladies. And I'm going to start that with a statement that I hope that you'll think is fair, Bianca, which is that, as the kids say, the struggle has been real for you as of late.
Yeah, my life is fucked up.
I'm so sorry. It is.
It is, but it's going to be fine, I think. About a year ago, a little more than a year ago, I got diagnosed with cancer, leukemia, which I like to call the kooky lukey. So that's what I have. I've been dealing with it for a year plus, so since October 2019, trying various different therapies and oral chemotherapy treatments, but nothing is really working. So I'm actually going to have a bone marrow, or also known as a stem cell transplant. And that should be coming up within the next couple months. So that should nip it in the butt.
Wow. Did you have to wait on a list for the bone marrow transplant?
No, actually, there's this really cool thing called Be the Match. It's a registry that anyone can sign up for, where they like send you a special Q-tip in the mail and you swab your mouth and send it back. And then you could donate your bone marrow if you end up being a match for someone. But they also are able to use stem cells from umbilical cords.
Oh, wow.
So when a woman gives birth, she could donate her umbilical cord and it goes into a cord blood bank and is frozen, and you can be matched to those cords. So that's actually what my transplant is going to be from, is cord blood.
Wow.
So I'm going to be a baby again.
I'm going to name my hardcore band that.
Cord blood. Yeah. That's cool. So yeah, it's pretty amazing. I mean, I'm like, who the heck thought of this, you know? Mm-hmm. And why? And it seems fucked up of them to even think of it, but I'm glad they did, you know?
Isn't it? And we'll get into this too, but I've had very different health problems as well. And something that's always comforted me is that the people on the other side who are helping me deal with it are at least 10 times smarter than me. Like 10 times is generous. Like the doctors and scientists and surgeons who have been working on this, like, do not have time for the pointy, weird, round plane conversation. And thank God, you know, like, I remember one of my doctors saying that he spent 5 hours that morning researching my case. And I was like, I have not spent 5 hours on anything productive in my life. So thank you so much. So I know what you mean, where I'm like, wait, how did you think of like using knee cartilage to help someone with their bone problem? You know what? I don't want to know. Thank you for doing it.
It's sort of like how every time I drive over a bridge, I'm like, thank God someone can do this kind of math.
Yeah.
Because otherwise we'd never get anywhere. Yeah. It was up to people like me.
I know. I think about that with everything. I'm like, every I think 90% of situations on planet Earth I am not equipped for. So when did you find out about your diagnosis, and what was that experience like, if you don't mind us asking? And if anything is like, you're like, I just don't want to talk about this anymore, I've talked about it nonstop, then
happy to talk about it and happy to tell you when I don't want to. Great. But I was just feeling kind of like tired, and I was honestly, the biggest symptom was that I was so bloated all the time. I was like, what am I eating that is even making this happen? And I couldn't figure it out. I was like tired walking up the street. And so I thought, well, I must just be really out of shape. And I made scheduled a bunch of sessions with a personal trainer. And I was like, I'm really going to just get in there and crush and just get a routine going, because I feel so weak and I want to feel stronger again. Anyway, I had a couple sessions, almost fainted in both of them, had to sit down and drink water. It was very embarrassing at the time. So I just scheduled a physical because I was like, maybe I have like some sort of a gluten allergy or something. Right. And anyway, it's been a while, and sis boom ba, whatever. So I go in, some random doc I found on the internet, and then they do blood work. This was on a Thursday. And then I go to work on Friday, normal, and they call me. And I don't pick up because I don't know the number. And then they call me like 3 more times. So I finally pick up. And it's the doctor. And she says, I have to go to the emergency room right now. You know, like, leave where you are and go there.
Oh, my God.
Because your white blood cell count is supposed to be between like 4 and 10,000. And mine was 365,000. So that's too many. Oh, oops. So I was in the hospital for like 5 days. They do a bone marrow biopsy, which is very metal, where they take a piece of your ass bone. And
what?
Yeah. They, like, right above your butt crack, there's like a bony part.
The coccyx?
It's the iliac crest.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Excuse me.
And they take a giant needle and they shove it into your bone, and then they suck out some of the bone marrow, and then they go like, and you could hear them taking a little bit of your bone, and it was very ouch. But yeah, the diagnosis was CML, which the doctors at the time were like, oh, this is like the good kind. This is like the common cold of cancer. Nobody is even going to notice. In a year, we'll be laughing about this. All you do is take this pill. It's amazing. And those pills do work for the majority of people who have CML, but not for me. So it's just been a lot of like up and down. And anyway, the bloating plot twist was not bloating at all. It was an enlarged spleen.
Wow.
Because your spleen filters your blood. And since my blood was all fucked up, my spleen was like, hello. There's a lot. Oh, and my liver was enlarged too.
See, this is something that I think must be extremely frustrating. And correct me if I'm wrong, but what you just described of them saying it's the good kind, and like when people are like, well, you're actually really lucky. Well, it could have been so much worse. That seems like something that would just enrage me, because it's like, I have cancer. Like, you know what I mean? Like, none of this could be happening. That's so.
You're like, okay, thanks.
Right. Like, actually, it's just like the common cold.
What? And you don't want to be like, oh, good.
Right.
That's one of the things I wanted to ask you. I mean, I think so many people want to know how to help their friends and loved ones, like going through really anything, but any kind of health thing. And I think it's actually impressive how many terrible things people say without realizing it. Yes. I think it's actually amazing. Like, sometimes people would say stuff like that, like, wow, you are so lucky that this wasn't worse. And I'm like, well, lucky's a weird word. Or, I don't know, for me, sometimes people would just want more and more detail. And I would literally get exhausted being like, I mean, I say this while you're giving us so much detail, but I would be like, I mean, but I guess what I mean is people who I didn't know that well. And so I would be like, I don't really want to necessarily go there.
Right.
I was in a car accident, and I remember one of these doctors who was amazing. But once, right before surgery, he was like, you have to tell me everything that happened later. And I was like, I'm totally drugged. And I just looked at my mom and I was like, why did he say that? Like, this is not something I want to necessarily relive. Yeah. So I'm wondering, like, what were things that people said that really helped you?
Yeah, I think for the most part, like, it's a hard balance, because you do emotionally want people to acknowledge that something's going on. A lot of times people will just be like, oh, well, it's fine, because, you know, you probably don't want to talk about it. So I'm not even going to. And they're like, I'm doing the right thing. Well, no, we won't talk about it. And so that's a little awkward. But then the other side of that coin is when people are like, okay, so when are you going to your next appointment? And what did the lab results say? And what did the doctor say? And then just making you recite all the facts over and over again. So I think probably the best place to start, it sounds pretty basic, but it's like, how are you feeling? Like,
yeah.
I was sorry to hear about that. Hope you're doing okay. And then just letting the person give you as much or as little as they want. It's sort of like if somebody has a loss in their family. I mean, it's grief in the same way, where it's like, I want to acknowledge that you have an outsized major drama happening, but I don't want to scoop your insides out with my hand. So, you know, like, I'm here if you want to talk, but.
Yeah.
I had a couple of instances that I found really weird. And I want to say also, like, some people I did not know very well at all reached out and said things that really helped. Like, one guy said, you know, he didn't detail it, but he said, I have been through really hard things like this, and I just want you to know that there is another side. And that really helped me, just someone, you know, sharing roughly their experience and trying to give me hope. on the other side, I remember once this girl eating a salad. She was a coworker at the time, and she was eating a salad, and she wasn't even like really looking at me. And she was just like, damn, girl, that must be rough, huh? And I was like, yeah, I mean, thank you for your obvious care and concern and sensitivity. I would prefer that kind of like casual, like, shit, what are you going to do if it was about me losing a package? But
just to say, oh, yeah, there's something very disrespectful about salad just as a food.
Just in general. It just, yeah, it's like, just even when I eat a salad, I feel guilty. Yeah, I feel guilty when I do it.
I like a salad that feels like a casserole. Like, I'm like, put enough stuff in it that it feels like a full meal that could also be lasagna. I was at Sundance and this agent came up to me and his face was so full of concern. And he was like, oh my God, how are you doing? Are you in physical therapy? And, you know, again, I sometimes don't like going into detail about it, but I at least was like, well, yeah, it's been really hard. And then he saw someone over my shoulder and was like, buddy, hey, what's going on? And walked right past me. And again, I was, I didn't have any friends there really. And I was just like, what just happened? So I guess like what I'm saying is, in an age where there's a lack of attention in general, it really helped me when really people just like, without seeming too self-centered, were like, how are you doing? And yeah, I mean, Devin was really helpful during that time. And a lot of what she did was just listen and just like keep going, like, that must be really hard. And saying things like, you should, you know, always feel welcome to tell me more, when I would be like, sorry, I don't want to keep going on about this.
I was just going to say, do think you have to really emotionally prepare for people to say some stupid stuff to you.
Definitely.
My boss, after I got diagnosed, my literal boss was like, I once got bit by a dog and had to have surgery on my hand. So I totally get what you're going through.
That is so funny. Once someone told me that they sometimes had allergies with their throat.
No.
And no. I was like, yeah, I mean, I guess pain is relative sometimes.
Yeah. I think that one of the things that's been most helpful to me as a person in general is actually our friend Beth sent me this video when we were younger, because I was complaining about how it annoyed me that my boyfriend at the time would always be like, gotta look on the bright side, like with every single thing. And sometimes I would be like, you know what? I'm just actually complaining about work and I just want to vent about it. And I don't want to think about the bright side right now. But she sent me this video that was like some kind of human resources, like training video for employees. And it was about how the silver linings method has been proven not to work. Like the response of like, no, but like everything's amazing for you actually. Or like, no, it's not that bad. No. You're so lucky. You're so like, you know, you should be grateful and all that stuff. Like, it feels like the right thing to say, because what I think when people say it, or when I have said it, it's like I'm wanting to say like, no, let me take your thing away. It's not that bad. But it actually feels invalidating, because you're like, oh, I just told you something I'm struggling with and you said it's not bad at all. And then it's like not effective. So there's so many things as an adult that I've been like, oh, there's no way I would have any idea what that feels like. So why am I trying to say that it should feel any certain type of way? So that helped me as a friend, I think.
Yeah, I think when somebody says, well, you know, at least you have a great support system, at least you have this, at least you have that, it's like, okay, well, now I feel guilty on top of feeling like shitty.
Right.
So, cool. Yeah, no, great thing. Or like, you know, I'm 32 and finding out because of all this, you know, probably not going to be able to have children via my own body. And people being like, well, there are a lot of ways to become a parent. No. And it's like, I know. Yeah, that's not what I'm talking about, though.
Right.
Yeah, I'm actually talking about pain. And I think people giving me room to hold that gives me room to hold that, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
But people are so scared of pain and discomfort. They're so, and just even having somebody willing to say, like, I'm going to sit in this with you, even just for 5 minutes or for the two sentences that we exchange, I'm going to give you my willingness to be uncomfortable, I think is a, is a gift. So rather than panicking and trying to take whatever person's pain away, whatever it may be, just giving them the gift of feeling it with them for even 2 seconds will probably make them feel better.
I think that's such a good point. And I think also people are afraid of how random life is and how random the world is. And
so random.
and nonsensical. That doesn't make sense. You know, people who are really good people getting sick, I would rather think of like Mitch McConnell should be going through what you're going through. You know, like that would make more sense to me. Someone who's inflicted a lot of pain and prevented a lot of people from having healthcare. Like, is that what karma should be or something? And so when anyone tried to make my situation make sense or try to construct a narrative around it, I guess I would want to be like, no. This is crazy, and I'm not going to say, you know, I'm not going to think of anything that is why I deserved this, at least not yet, you know, or I guess I know I didn't deserve it, but I guess what I mean is I'm not going to try to apply logic to this because it will make me insane, but I think it freaks people out, the idea that life can change in a phone call or in a second.
Yeah, and I think I sort of had a crash course in dealing with this type of thing over the past few years. Like, just randomly, a lot of sort of bad stuff happened all in a row. I got hit by a car a block away from my house.
Oh my God.
A Domino's delivery guy. But I was fine, pretty much. There was a fire in my apartment building and I was like displaced for like 6 months couch surfing. That. There were like a few people close to me who died and then this, and it's just, it's so easy to kind of slip into this thing, this like fearful, you know, why always me? Why me thing?
Yeah.
But for me, I think the most valuable coping strategy has just been, you know, just trying to keep it light with those, especially with those people who it's not worth your time to like educate on how best to deal with me, you know?
Yeah. I think that there, I don't know how you experience that, but I feel like that sounds like a lot of trauma. And I know that my PTSD looks like, and what I've read about PTSD. There was an example they gave children who experienced trauma. They asked them to draw a picture and then they asked what happens next. And almost unanimously, a bad thing happened next. You know, they draw a house and the next thing is the house is on fire. And so I predicted everything that I thought was going to happen. I predicted a nightmare. And I think because I wanted to prepare myself for it because and I just know for me that feeling is exhausting to prepare for an awful thing to happen. So I think, I don't know your experience, but I feel like that added a layer of like.
Yeah, I actually had like a PTSD, I don't know, flare about a week after the fire in my building. I was living in a friend's apartment while she was on vacation that was like nearby, and on that street there was like this horrible car accident randomly. Just this woman ran a red light and killed a few people, a couple kids.
I remember reading about that.
Yeah, in Park Slope. And I was staying like a block away from where that happened when it happened. And I remember calling my mom crying and being like, it's because I'm near this place. That's why it happened, because I am cursed and I bring death and destruction wherever I go. Because a neighbor in my building had actually died in the fire. And I had seen I'd seen his, you know, them pull him out of the building. And I mean, it was truly very traumatizing.
Yeah.
So I had to talk whenever I feel that way. I have to call like my mom or my friend or my therapist and be like, it's not because of me, right? That like California is burning or whatever it may be.
No, I totally know what you're talking about. I think I even said it to my boyfriend at the time. I said, I'm bad luck. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. And he was like, what? And I just truly believed that. I was like, well, wherever I go, something terrible happens.
Exactly. It's a weird feeling.
Yeah. How do you think your take on dating and love has changed? I know for me, I sort of have a before and an after in my life, you know? So it's like, oh, that was when life was super simple compared to now, you know?
I think the way I would characterize it would be that I feel like I'm about 150 years old when I'm, you know what I mean? Like I'm 32 and I am a nice, cute, fun gal, I think.
Hilarious.
You are. This is true.
I wasn't saying like hilarious that you think that. I meant you are hilarious.
Yeah, no, totally, Bianca. Totally, totally.
Sure. Okay. You guys are crazy.
But I just feel like ancient when I'm on a dating app and I'm trying to like text about, I don't know, what do you talk about? Oh, lol, how's your pandy? You've been doing Zoom, like.
You've been doing Zooms? Cool.
She said Zoom, but Zeus is really funny.
I said Zoom.
Oh, okay.
Wait, you thought I said Zeus?
Zoos.
Like, you've been doing Zeus? Oh, cool. I've been going to
Zoo. You want to hit a zoo together?
And then it's like, oh, well, me personally, yeah, I'm just gearing up for a bone marrow transplant. You know, it's like you can't, there's nothing casual about my life right now. So there's no such thing as small talk for me.
Yes.
Right. If I'm doing small talk, it's only because the person I'm talking to doesn't know what's going on with me. And if the person I'm talking to doesn't know what's going on with me, there's no hope of, you know, making an actual connection. So, you know, I have no idea post-transplant what dating will be like. Hopefully I'll get back out there. But for now, it feels like such a distant even possibility. You know, I've been single for quite a while. And I'm going through, I mean, I'm going through this with the help of my mom and my family and my friends, but I don't have a partner helping me through this. So it's going to be interesting to see like if I will, and I've been pretty closed off in that department too because of previous situations, but it's going to be interesting to see like in what ways I can and will be able to open up in the future and allow for somebody else to like part, like the idea of partnership or companionship is so foreign to me right now because I do feel like a little me against the world feeling, you know?
Yeah.
And we're going to take one more commercial break and we'll be right back.
I want you.
Hacks is back for season 3, and so is the official Hacks podcast. In each episode, Hacks creators Lucia Aniello, Paul W. Downs, and Jen Statsky speak with cast and crew members to unpack the Emmy-winning comedy series. You'll hear Hannah Einbinder and Jean Smart speak to their on-screen dynamic, along with Hacks writer and actor Pat Regan, on how their improv experience helped them when shooting scenes and what it was like writing scripts for specific actors.
You'll also hear from crew members like the costume designers on what it was like creating the world that Deborah and Ava inhabit. Hear stories from the show's writer's room, on-set antics, and more. Watch Hacks streaming exclusively on Max and listen to the official Hacks podcast on Max or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV true crime podcast, To Live and Die in LA. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turned sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm preaching to somebody today who is waiting for God to give you your next step. And you don't know what it is yet. You need God to show you your next step. Because God, I can't stay where I am, like I am, where it is. This isn't going to work. I have to move on, but I don't know where. A lot of time you'll use it as an excuse. Well, I don't know how. I don't know where. I don't know what. God, if you show me. God, if you tell me. God, if no. You know enough right now. And if you needed to know more, he would show you.
Hey, this is Stephen Furtick. I want to invite you to listen to my podcast, Elevation with Stephen Furtick. I am here to help you for the battles that you face in life, for the times when you feel discouraged, for the times that you need guidance from God. I want to give you the truth of what he says about you to help you rise to your full potential. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back with Bianca. Were you single when you found out? And have you been in any like situationships or relations since then? Because it's been over a year, right?
Yeah, I was single when I found out. I had been sort of casually dating someone. And it was like a mutual ghosting that was totally fine with me. And then I found out. And then in the meantime, I had like one thing with somebody I knew from high school.
Ooh.
So I told him about it like during the date.
Yeah.
Which was a little weird. And that was on March 13th, like the day that New York City shut down.
Oh my God.
And so then, since then, it's been pretty barren. Landscape.
Yeah. I think that there is no framework for it because I don't see it talked about a lot in terms of how a diagnosis of any kind affects dating. And like you said, it's one of those things where dating is casual and how do you bring up something that's not casual? Not that it's in any way comparable, but I think maybe it's similar to like if you have a kid and you don't know if you say like on the first date. And it's shocking how the only depictions we see of this are like so super dramatized in
TV. The Walk to Remember, Fault in Our Stars model.
Oh, so yes. Much like my story. Like,
I have to tell you a secret, but I can't because you're not going to love me anymore. Like,
yeah, like let's go to like Anne Frank's house for whatever reason. Like, what is happening?
Wait, is that a part of the story?
In the Fault in Their Stars, yeah.
I haven't actually seen it, but
I'm upset. And I saw this thing.
All I saw was, yeah, the trailers with like Shailene Woodley and it and them like lying upwards and downwards. Which even that in itself, like who lies with your faces next to each other in the grass?
No.
Disgusting. Talk about COVID in your eyes.
If I saw someone do that in Central Park, I would throw an egg at them. I would throw a hard-boiled egg at them and watch it bounce off both of their foreheads back and forth.
Thank you. Yeah, I saw that movie and that was pre-cancer diagnosis. And even then I was like, come on, guys, you know? And also I think being in this age group with and maybe any chronic illness, I think, but especially cancer, the young adult with cancer thing. It's like the lost age group. You know, kids with cancer are very popular. You know, the Jimmy Fund. They're getting a lot of...
Yes, the Jimmy Fund.
They're getting a lot of Makes a Wish. You know, they're doing Meeting Shaquille O'Neal or whatever the case may be. You know, Drake is FaceTiming them in their room.
Right.
Whatever. And then the elderly, you know, are surrounded by their friends and family and all their grandkids, and they have time to say goodbye and, oh, a life well lived, da-da-da. Yes. And then meanwhile, and I'm in a young adults with cancer support group.
Oh, wow.
And it's like me and friggin' Jesse and, you know, this other guy who just got married. It's just like a bunch of jamokes, you know? Like, we're not, you don't become all of a sudden like a virtuous, wise.
Of course not.
So it's just, it's such a strange thing in pop culture, the whole Walk to Remember thing. I can't relate to it at all.
I think that's what, it's so funny. Like, I think the idea of a savior is not as appealing as I thought it would be.
Right.
Like, of course I love the idea of having a partner, but I also just want someone to be quiet next to me. And I don't know anyone who really wants to do that. And more than anything, though, I would rather just have a lot of money. Like, I fantasize more so about having a lot of money than I do a boyfriend right now. And I think that's because, as we were saying, like, money just makes things like this easier. Like, I would rather have money to pay, as I did for endless lifts because I couldn't drive, or, you know, endless random creams that could help with my scars, or, you know, rent so I could spend time just relaxing and not worrying about anything. So a Walk to Remember, I guess what I'm saying, works for me more if Shane West is like Daddy Warbucks and just takes care of all of my needs while I can hang out and listen to Christian music or whatever what Mandy Moore wants to do.
Yeah. It's very, but that piece of it too, and I haven't talked about this before now, but I just will dive in. The financial piece is very complicated as well, because, like, you know, I have a steady job that I can do remotely, and they're willing to give me the time off that I need to have this, like, insane procedure. I have a support system. Like, I have so much privilege, especially in the medical landscape where, you know, people of color and people who aren't native English speakers, like, I don't know how advocating for yourself as a cis, straight, white, privileged lady is hard enough. So, you know, just and my support system is amazing. My mom is moving in with me in Brooklyn, leaving her literal home to live.
That's what my mom did, and it was very helpful.
It's like unbelievable, but, you know, there's still money panic a little bit, and being like, oh, how am I gonna finagle this? You know, like, right, I don't have a lot of money. And then my aunts go and do a GoFundMe for me without telling me about it or asking me about it or even telling my mom or my stepdad about it.
Wow. I saw that GoFundMe. I didn't know.
That's,
you didn't
crazy
know about
aunt
it.
Behavior.
It was a fully unsanctioned aunt, like, just wiling, you know, aunts just going crazy. So that was a complicated feeling.
Yes, and I'm sure.
And at the end of the day, oh my God, I'm like stunned at how I can't believe how lucky I am, you know, like, and I can't believe how much support I have. And I do feel just so insanely grateful for them for doing it. But I would never have said, yeah, let's do it. And that's exactly why they did it, because they know that I wouldn't, you know, and she knows me. She's like, we have to do it behind her back. There's no other way.
Were these Worcester aunts?
Oh, yeah.
I love the Worcester aunts. They are always showing up in the most unexpected ways.
Yeah, Auntie Lynn and Auntie Susan, huge shout out to those.
Huge shout out.
And I even was texting with my Auntie Lynn about it the other day, and she texted me back, you know, you don't have to keep thanking me, okay?
I love that. That's
so sweet.
Ugh, sorry. Jeez.
That is
Devin,
so sweet.
My family and Devin have been really helpful that way, where I thank my mom all the time for stuff she does, and I thank my sister all the time. They're like, yeah, of course.
Well, because it's crazy, like, I was going to say this before, but Carolina will say, like, work's been hard. I'm sorry. I've been complaining so much. Sorry. And I'm like, wait, what? Or so I would like give her a ride. We lived 10 minutes drive away from each other in LA, which is like nothing in LA. And I would give her a ride once, and she'd be like, Are you sure? It's nothing. Come on.
I don't know how you feel, but I feel like asking for help is like, and it sounds like with the whole GoFundMe situation, you're similar, where I'm like, no, I would rather suffer through it alone. And obviously when people do offer me help, I'm like, wow, that was so much easier than me, you know, being in a really smelly Lyft where the person put 18, what's it called? Scent.
Glade scent diffusers.
They put 18 Glade diffusers in it, and I'm like choking, or else, you know, blew up farts the whole time.
Oh, God.
And I'm like, farts.
That was the ride with me, actually. That wasn't an Uber.
Exactly.
Wait, so I also just want to give another shout out to your aunts that they chose such a good picture for the GoFundMe. I was like, I thought it was maybe you that made it just because of the picture. I was like, this is an insanely cool picture, and it's clearly like professionally done, and what a great pick.
And shout out to my friend Bill Wadman at Bill Wadman, great photographer, who took that picture.
Very
even
cool.
Though you should have asked Devin to make a collage, because her Photoshop skills from years of making, I'm assuming from years of making pony and dog collages.
On my Microsoft Word, yeah.
Are pretty amazing.
Part of asking for help is like, I feel like, you know, I'm a little bit of a control freak, codependent. Yeah.
Same.
You know, pleaser kind of type.
Yes.
And so not asking for help is really just about attempting to control the narrative, or control, yeah, like have any little ounce of control over what's happening, you know.
I felt guilty for not responding to like emails or texts while being in like monumental pain. It was like, I think I can take a break.
I'm still working full time. And I'm like, I can't let them down.
My sister would like take away my phone because I would literally like throw up while looking at it. But yeah, I felt weird to just not think about that.
Like admit defeat, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Be like, oh yes, I'm cancer person now, so.
Right. I didn't want.
Can't do anything. Bye.
I was very scared of pity. Like any sort of pity made me really angry, because I didn't want, like you said, that to be my story. And I think especially like the first few months home, I really pushed myself much harder than I should to get back to normal. Like, I was like, all right, yeah, we're getting back to work. No, I'm fine. And this is like while I literally am taking 5-minute walks every day to try to get some sunshine. And that is like extremely hard. Or like, you know, I was on pain meds that made me like sweat profusely. So I would be in meetings and afterwards just be quiet for the rest of the day, because I was like, that was extremely hard. I didn't want to face the grief that things were going to be really hard, and that the easy part of my life might be gone. I hope you guys saw by the title, but this is a part one episode of 2 episodes. There is a sequel to come, where we will go more into dating when you have a fucked up body, and we will also hear about the craziest breakup story of all time. Please stay tuned. Instagram screenshots are included.
True romance, it's true. Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
I am so excited about this podcast, The Bright Side. You guys are giving people a chance to shine a light on their lives, shine a light on a little advice that they want to share.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
Imagine you ask two people the same seven questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same seven questions, including Courtney Cox, Rob Delaney, Liz Phair, and many, many more. Join me on season three of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Seven questions, limitless answers.
Bean Dad, The Dress, 30 to 50 Feral Hogs. If you knew what any of those were, you spend too much time online. And hey, I do too. 16th Minute of Fame is a new weekly podcast hosted by me, Jamie Loftus. And every week, we take a closer look at an internet character of the day. Who are they? What made them so notorious? How did the internet or the algorithm choose them? And what does a person do when they're suddenly confronted with more attention than the human psyche can handle? Listen to 16th Minute of Fame starting May 7th on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.